Chapter 33. "Our home away from home," said Giordino, at his first look of the shanty boat he and Pitt were borrowing from the old fisherman. "Hardly bigger than a North Dakota outhouse." "Not fancy, but functional," Pitt said, as he paid the taxi driver and studied the ancient boat that was moored at the end of a rickety, sagging dock that extended from the riverbank on waterlogged pilings. Inside the dock, several small aluminum fishing boats bobbed in the green water, their outboard motors showing rust and grease from long, hard use. "Talk about roughing it," Giordino groaned, as he unloaded their underwater equipment from the trunk of the taxi. "No central heating or air conditioning. I'll bet this tub doesn't have running water or electricity to operate lights and a television." "You don't need running water," said Pitt. "You can bathe in the river." "What about a toilet?" Pitt smiled. "Use your imagination." Giordino pointed to a small reception dish on the roof. "Radar," he muttered incredulously. "It has radar." The shanty boat's hull was broad and flat with easy rakes, much like that of a small barge. The black paint was heavily scarred from 100 sideswipes against dock pilings and other boats, but the bottom, that could be seen below the waterline, appeared scraped clean of marine growth. A square box with windows and doors, which was the house, rose about 7 feet, its weathered blue walls nearly flush with the sides of the hull. A small, roofed-over veranda sporting lawn chairs stretched across the bow. Above, centered on the house roof, as if it was an afterthought, sat a low, raised, bridge-like structure that acted as a skylight and a small pilot house. On the roof lay a short skiff with paddles lashed upside down. The black chimney pipe from a wood-burning pot-bellied stove stuck up from the aft end of the house. Giordino shook his head sadly. "I've slept on bus benches that had more class than this. Kick me the next time I complain about my motel room." "Oh, ye of little faith, stop griping. Keep telling yourself that it didn't cost us anything." "I've got to admit that it has character." Pitt aimed the chronically complaining Giordino toward the shanty boat. "Go load up the equipment and check out the engine. I'll go over to the store and buy some groceries." "I can't wait to see our motive power," Giordino groused. 10-1 it doubles as an egg beater." Pitt walked a boardwalk through a boatyard leading down the bank into the river. A worker was giving a wooden fishing boat, set inside a cradle on rails, a new coat of anti-fouling paint on the keel and hull. Next door, Pitt came to a wooden structure under a sign that proclaimed Wheeler's Landing. A long porch ran around the building, which was raised off the ground by rows of short pilings. The walls were painted a bright green, with yellow shutters framing the windows. Inside, Pitt found it incredible that so much merchandise could be crammed in so small a space. Boating parts took up one end of the store, fishing and hunting supplies the other. The center was devoted to groceries. A compact refrigerator stocked with 5 times as much beer as soft drinks and dairy products stood against one wall. Pitt picked up a hand basket and made out very well, selecting enough foodstuffs to feed him and Giordino 3 or 4 days. And as with most men, he probably bought more than they could eat, especially specialty items and condiments. Setting the overloaded basket on the counter by the cash register, he introduced himself to the portly owner of the store, who was busily stocking canned goods. "Mr. Wheeler, my name is Dirk Pitt. My friend and I have chartered the Bayou Kid shanty boat." Wheeler brushed his thick mustache with the light touch of a finger and stuck out his hand.
"Been expecting you. The kid said you'd be by this morning. She's all ready to go. Fuel tank filled, battery charged, and topped off with oil."
"Thank you for your trouble. We should be back in a few days."
"I hear y'all is going up to the canal them chinks built."
Pitt nodded. "Word travels."
"Y'all got charts of the river?" asked Wheeler.
"I was hoping you might supply them." Wheeler turned and checked the labels taped on a slotted cabinet hanging on the wall containing rolled nautical charts of the local waterways and topographical maps of the surrounding marshlands. He pulled out several and spread them on the counter.
Here's a chart showing depths of the river and a few topo maps of the Atchafalaya Valley. One of them shows the area around the canal.
You're a great help, Mr. Wheeler, said Pitt sincerely. Thank you.
I guess you all know the Chinks won't let you on the canal. They've got it chained off.
Is there another way in? Asked Pitt.
Sure, at least two of them.
Wheeler took a pencil and began making the maps.
You can take either Hooker's or Mortimer's bayous. Both run parallel to the canal and empty into it about 8 miles from the Atchafalaya. Y'all will find Hooker to be the easiest to navigate the shantyboat.
Does Chinchang Maritime own the property around Hooker's Bayou, too? Wheeler shook his head.
Their borders only run 100 yards on either side of the canal.
What happens if you cross the barrier?
Local fishermen and hunters sneak in sometimes. More often than not, they're caught and thrown out by an armed boatload of automatic rifle-toting Chinks who patrol the canal.
Then security is tight, said Pitt.
Not so much at night. Y'all could probably get in, see what y'all want to see, since we're having a quarter moon for the next 2 nights before it wanes, and get out before they know y'all been there.
Has anyone reported seeing anything strange in and around the canal?
Nothing worth writing home about. Nobody can figure why the fuss to keep people out of a ditch through a swamp.
Any barge or boat traffic in and out? Wheeler shook his head.
None. The chain barrier is fixed in place and can't be opened unless you blast it with TNT.
Does the canal have a name?
It used to be known as Mystic Bayou, Wheeler said wistfully. And a pretty bayou it was, too, before it was dug all to hell. Lots of deer, ducks, and alligator to hunt. Catfish, bream, and bass to fish. Mystic Bayou was a sportsman's paradise. Now it's all gone, and what's left is off limits.
Hopefully my friend and I will have some answers in the next 48 hours, said Pitt, as he loaded the groceries in an empty cardboard box offered by Wheeler. The boat landing owner penciled several numbers on the corner of a map.
Y'all get into trouble, call my cell phone number. Y'all hear? I'll see that you get help real quick.
Pitt was touched by the amiable and intelligent people in southern Louisiana who had offered their advice and assistance. They were contacts to be treasured. He thanked Wheeler and carried the groceries down the dock to the shantyboat. As he stepped on board the veranda, Giordino stood in the doorway, shaking his head in wonderment.
"You're not going to believe what you see in here," he said.
"It's worse than you thought?"
"Not at all. The interior is clean and Spartan. It's the engine and our passenger that boggle the mind."
"What passenger?" Giordino handed Pitt a note he'd found pinned to the door. It read, "Mr. Pitt and Mr. Giordino, I thought that since you wanted to look like locals on a fishing trip, you should have a companion. So I loaned you Romberg to embellish your image as rivermen. He'll eat any kind of fish you throw at him. Luck, the Bayou Kid." "Who's Romberg?" asked Pitt.
Giordino stepped out of the doorway and, without comment, pointed inside at a bloodhound lying on his back with his paws in the air, big floppy ears splayed to the sides, his tongue half hanging out.
"Is he dead?"
"He might as well be, for all the enthusiasm he's shown at my presence," said Giordino. "He hasn't twitched or blinked an eye since I came on board."
"What is so unusual about the engine?"
"You've got to see this."
Giordino led the way through the one room that composed the living room, bedroom, and kitchen of the shantyboat to a trap door in the floor. He lifted the cover and pointed below into the compact engine room in the hull. A Ford 427 cubic inch V8 with dual quad carburetors. An oldie but goodie. It's got to have at least 400 horsepower.
"Probably closer to 425, said Pitt, admiring the powerful engine that appeared in immaculate condition.
How the old man must have laughed after I asked him if the engine could move a boat against the river current. "As big as this floating shack is," said Giordino, "I'd guess we could make close to 25 miles an hour if we had to."
"Keep it slow and easy. We don't want to look like we're in a hurry."
"How far is the canal?"
"I haven't measured the distance, but it looks to be close to 60 miles.
"We'll want to get there sometime before sunset," said Giordino, mentally calculating a leisurely cruising speed.
"I'll cast off. You take the helm and head her into the channel while I store the groceries."
Giordino needed no coaxing. He couldn't wait to start the big 427 Ford and feel its torque. He hit the starter, and it rumbled into life with a mean and nasty growl. He let it idle for a few moments, savoring the sound. It did not turn over smoothly, but loped. It was too good to believe, Giordino thought to himself. The engine was not stock. It was modified and tuned for racing.
"My God," he murmured to himself, "it's far more powerful than we thought."
Knowing without a shade of doubt Giordino would soon get carried away and push the engine throttle to its stop, Pitt secured the groceries so they wouldn't end up on the deck. Then he stepped over the sleeping Romberg, went out onto the forward veranda, and relaxed in a lawn chair. But not before bracing his feet against the bulwark and wrapping his arm around the railing. Giordino waited until the Atchafalaya River was clear and there were no boats in sight. He laid out the nautical chart of the river provided by Doug Wheeler and studied the river depths ahead. Then, true to form, he increased the speed of the old shanty boat until the flat nose bow was a good foot above the water and the stern was burrowed, cutting a wide groove across the surface. To see such an ungainly craft barreling upriver at better than 35 miles an hour was an extraordinary and incongruous sight. On the forward veranda, the wind resistance and the raised angle of the bow pressed Pitt back against the wall of the house with such force he felt constrained and barely able to move. Finally, after about 2 miles of spreading a 3-foot-high wash behind the shanty boat that swept into the marshlands and splayed the unbroken green mat of water hyacinth that spread from the river channel, Giordino observed 2 small fishing boats approaching on their way to Morgan City. He eased back the throttle and brought the shanty boat to a crawl. The water hyacinth is a pretty plant, but is a disaster to inland waterways, growing at a prolific rate and choking off streams and bayous. They are kept afloat by their stems full of air bladders. The hyacinth sprouts beautiful lavender-pink flowers, but unlike most other flowering plants, it smells like a fertilizer factory when pulled from the water. Feeling as if he had survived a roller coaster ride, Pitt returned inside, retrieved the topographical map, and began studying the twists and turns in the river, as well as familiarizing himself with the network of swampy bayous and lakes between Wheeler's Landing and the canal dug by Chin Chang Maritime. He traced and compared the landmarks and river bends with those on the map. It was refreshing to sit comfortably in the shade of the veranda overhang and experience the pleasant sensation of traveling smoothly over timeless waters that only a boat can provide. Riverbank vegetation varied from mile to mile. Thick forests with willows, cottonwoods, and cypresses interspersed with berry bushes, and wild grapevines slowly gave way to a moist, primeval swamp, a prairie of soaring reeds swaying under a light breeze that swept off to the horizon. A lone cypress rose majestically out of the grass like a frigate on the sea. He saw herons walking on their long, stick-like legs along the fringe of water, their necks bent into an S-shape as they pecked for food in the mud. To a hunter kayaking or paddling a canoe through the swamps of southern Louisiana, the trick was to find a firm piece of ground on which to pitch a tent for the night. Duckweed and hyacinth floated on much of the open water. Forests grew from the brackish muck, not dry land. It was hard for Pitt to imagine that all the water he could see came from as far away as Ontario and Manitoba, North Dakota and Minnesota, and every state below. Only behind the safety of thousands of miles of levee systems did people cultivate farms and build cities and towns. It was a landscape unlike any he'd ever seen. The day was pleasantly cool, with just enough breeze to make small waves across the surface of the water. The hours rolled by as if time was as limitless as space. As idyllic as the lazy cruise up the river seemed, they were on serious business that could easily be the cause of their deaths. There could be no mistakes, no errors in planning their reconnaissance of the mysterious canal. A few minutes after noon, Pitt took a salami sandwich and a bottle of beer up to Giordino in the little wheelhouse on the roof. Pitt offered to take the helm, but Giordino wouldn't hear of it. He was having too much fun, so Pitt returned to his chair on the veranda. Although time seemed to have no meaning, Pitt's hours were neither idle nor aimless. He spent the time laying out their diving equipment. He unpacked and adjusted the controls on the little AUV he had used at Orion Lake. Lastly, he removed the night vision goggles from their case and laid them on the cushions of an old worn sofa. Shortly after 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Pitt stepped inside the house and stood at the base of the ladder leading up to the pilot house on the roof. 1/2 mile before we reach the mouth of the canal, he alerted Giordino. Move on past another 1/2 mile to the next bayou. Then swing a turn to starboard. What's it called? Asked Giordino. Hooker's Bayou, but don't bother looking for a sign at the intersection. Take it for about 6 miles to where the map shows an abandoned dock by a capped oil well. We'll tie up there and have dinner while we wait for darkness. Giordino eased the shanty boat around a long string of barges pushed downriver by a large towboat. The captain of the towboat gave a blast from his air horn as they passed, no doubt thinking the owner was on board the shantyboat. Pitt had returned to his chair on the bow and waved. Using a pair of binoculars, he scrutinized the canal as they crossed its mouth. It was carved in a perfectly straight course nearly 1/4 mile wide that seemed to roll like a green carpet over the horizon. A rusty chain stretched across the mouth and was attached to concrete pilings. Large billboard-sized signs were raised with red letters against a background of white that said, No trespassing. Anyone caught on Chin Chang Maritime property will be prosecuted. Small wonder the local residents hate Chin Chang, thought Pitt. He seriously doubted that the local sheriff would go out of his way to arrest friends and neighbors for hunting or fishing on foreign-owned property. 40 minutes later, Giordino eased back on the throttle and swung the bulky shantyboat from the narrow channel of Hooker's Bayou and crept to a halt toward the remains of a concrete pier, nudging the flat, raked bow onto a low bank. Stenciled lettering on the concrete pilings read, Cherokee Oil Company, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The boat had no anchor, so they took up long poles that were tied to the catwalks for the purpose and rammed them into the mud. Then they tied the mooring lines from the boat to the poles. Lastly, a gangplank was run out onto firm ground. I have a contact on radar moving across the marsh from the southeast, Giordino calmly reported. They're coming from the direction of the Mystic Canal. They're coming fast, Giordino said in a deliberate tone. Shang Security didn't waste any time tagging us. Pitt went inside and returned with a large square net with vertical supports he'd found on the aft veranda. Drag Romberg out here and get yourself a bottle of beer. Giordino looked at the net. You think you're going to catch crab for dinner? No, Pitt answered, catching a glint from the setting sun on a shiny object far away in the ocean of grass. The trick is to look like I know what I'm doing. A helicopter, Giordino said in a deliberate tone. Or an ultralight like Washington. Too low. More likely a hovercraft. Are we on Chin Chang's real estate? According to the map, we're a good 300 yards off their property line. They must be paying a social call to check us out.
"What's the scenario?" asked Giordino. "I'll play a crab fisherman. You act like a redneck swilling beer, and Romberg can play Romberg. Not easy for an Italian to pretend he's French Cajun. Chew on some okra." The dog cooperated when dragged out onto the veranda, not out of obedience, but out of necessity. He walked slowly across the gangplank and did his duty. The hound has an iron bladder, Giordino thought, to have lasted this long. Then Romberg abruptly became alert, barked at a rabbit that darted through the grass, and chased after him. "No Academy Award nomination for you, Romberg," Giordino yelled at the dog as it took off onto a path leading along the bank. Then he flopped in a lawn chair, removed his sneakers and socks, and propped his bare feet up on a railing, a bottle of Dixie beer clutched in one hand. On stage for the opening act, Pitt, with his old .45 Colt stashed in a bucket at his feet and covered by a rag, Giordino, with the Acerma 12-gauge shotgun from Pitt's hangar resting beneath the pad on his lawn chair, they watched the black dot that was the hovercraft grow in size as it flew over the marshlands, swirling and flattening a swath through the reeds. It was an amphibious craft that could make the transition from water to land. Propelled by twin aircraft engines with propellers at the stern, the hovercraft was supported by a cushion of air contained within a heavy rubber structure and produced by a smaller engine attached to a horizontal fan. Control was accomplished with a set of rudders, much like those used on aircraft. Pitt and Giordino watched as it moved effortlessly and rapidly over the marshlands and mudflats.
"She's fast," commented Pitt. "Capable of 50 miles an hour. About 20 feet long with a small cabin. By the look of her, she can carry 6 people. "And none of them are smiling," muttered Giordino, as the hovercraft approached the shantyboat and slowed. At that moment, Romberg came bounding from the swamp grass, barking up a storm.
"Good old Romberg," said Pitt. "Right on cue."
The hovercraft came to a stop 10 feet away, its skirted hull resting in the bayou. The engines died away to a dull murmur. The 5 men on board all wore sidearms but carried no rifles. They were wearing the same Chin Chang security uniforms Pitt had seen at Orion Lake. Every eye had the unmistakable slant of an Asian. They weren't smiling. Their sunburned faces looked dead serious. This was clearly an attempt at intimidation.
"What are you doing here?" asked a hard-faced individual in fluent English.
He wore the insignia on his shoulders and hat of someone in command, and he looked like a man who would enjoy sticking pins in living insects, a man who would welcome the opportunity to shoot another human being. He eyed Romberg with a gleam in his eye.
"We're having fun," Pitt said casually. "What's y'all's problem?"
"This is private property," the hovercraft's commander said coldly. "You cannot moor here.
I happen to know for a fact that the land around Hooker's Bayou belongs to the Cherokee Oil Company."
Pitt actually wasn't certain who owned the property, but he assumed it had to be Cherokee Oil. The commander turned to his men, and they jabbered among themselves in Chinese. Then the commander stepped to the side of the hovercraft and announced, "We are coming aboard." Pitt tensed and readied himself to snatch up the old Colt. Then he realized the demand to come aboard was a deception. But Giordino didn't fall for it.
"The hell y'all are," said Giordino threateningly. "Y'all got no authority. Now get your ass out of here before we call the sheriff."
The commander looked at the weathered shanty boat and the faded and shabby clothing worn by Pitt and Giordino.
"You have a radio or a cellular phone on that boat?"
"A flare gun," Giordino answered, scratching an imaginary itch between the toes of one foot.
"We shoot flares and the law comes a-running."
The hovercraft's commander's eyes narrowed.
"I do not find that believable.
Exhibiting a pompous attitude toward intellectual impeccability will get you nowhere," Pitt suddenly said smartly.
The commander tensed.
"What was that?" he demanded. "What did you say?"
I said leave us alone, Pitt drawled. We ain't hurting nothing.
Another conference between the commander and his men. Then he pointed a finger at Pitt.
I warn you. Do not enter Chinchang maritime property.
Who'd want to? Giordino said nastily. Y'all's company ruined the swamp, killed the fish, and drove off the wildlife with your dredging. No reason to go in there anyways.
The commander arrogantly turned his back and dismissed them as the first drops of a rain squall began to splatter on the roof of the shantyboat. He gave the still-barking Romberg a withering stare and said something to his crew. The engines accelerated, and the hovercraft began moving off in the direction of the canal. A moment later, they disappeared from view as the rain poured down in blinding torrents. Giordino sat enjoying the rain splashing on his bare feet as they dangled over the railing. He cringed as Romberg shook his wet fur, sending a barrage of water flying in every direction. A glittering performance, except for your attempt at a drawing-room put-down. Pitt laughed. A bit of keen and boisterous freewheeling humor never fails to get a rise. You might have given us away. I wanted them to record our arrogance. Did you catch the video camera on top of the cabin? At this moment, our pictures are being sent by satellite to Shang's security headquarters in Hong Kong for identification. A pity we can't be there to see Shang's face when he's informed that we're poking around another one of his sensitive projects. Then our friends will be back. You can bet the farm on it. Romberg will protect us, Giordino said jokingly. Pitt looked around for the dog and found him curled up inside the shantyboat, having quickly returned to his catatonic state. That I seriously doubt.